Vishnu dynasty. Vishnu and by the Vishnis. Andhaka and by the Andhakas. Madhu and by the Madhus. Shurasena and by the Shurasenas. Vasharha Kahai and by the Dasharhakas. Shlaghaniya by the praiseworthy. Ihitaha endeavoring. Shashvat always. Gurushinjaya Pandaviki assisted by the Pandavas. Kurus and Srinjayas. Snigda, affectionate. Smita, smiling. Ikshita, being regarded as. Udarahai, magnanimous. That's magnanimous, that's right. Bhakyahai, the instructions. Vikramalilaya, the pastimes of heroism. Rilokam, human society. Ramayam asa, pleased. Murcha, by his personal form. Sarva anga ramyaya, the form that pleases everyone,
the form that pleases everyone
by all parts of the body.
By all parts of the body.
So translation, assisted by the descendants of Bhoja, Vishnu, Andhaka, Madhu, Shurasena, Dasharha, Kuru, Shunjaya, and Pandu, Lord Krishna performed various activities. By his pleasing smiles, his affectionate behavior, his instructions, and his uncommon pastimes like raising Govardhan Hill, the Lord appearing in his transcendental body pleased all of human society. So you can repeat. Assisted by the descendants of Bhoja Vrishni, Andhaka Madhu, Shurasena Dasharha, Kuru Shunjaya and Pandu, Lord Krishna performed various activities. By his pleasing smiles, his affectionate behavior, his instructions and his uncommon pastimes, like raising Govardhan Hill, the Lord, appearing in his transcendental body, pleased all of human society. So purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. The words Rilokam, Ramayam, Asa, Murtya, Sarvanga, Ramayaya are significant. Krishna is the original form, Bhagavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is therefore described here by the word Murtya. The word Murti means form. Krishna or God is never impersonal. The impersonal feature is but a manifestation of his transcendental body. Yasha prapa bhavato jagadanda koti. The Lord is nara kriti, exactly resembling the form of a human being. But his form is different from ours. Therefore, the word sarvanga ramyaya informs us that every part of his body is pleasing for everyone to see. Apart from his smiling face, every part of his body, his hands, his legs, his chest, is pleasing to the devotees who cannot at any time stop seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. So, Om Ganat Timidanda Shag, Gananjana Shalakaya Chachodam Miditam, Yena Tasmai Shigurubaya Namaha. So, previously, in several cases, we talked about the etymological understanding of the word Krishna. So, We'll speak about it a little bit, and then we'll talk about Krishna's attractive activities and characteristics from nectar devotion. So we understand the word Krishna means to attract or to pull. Just like in the Gita it says, Krishi Goraksha Banijam Vaisha Karma Svabhavajam, in the description of a Vaisha. So a Vaisha is generally engaging the, at least traditionally, engaging the bulls to pull and till the fields. You know, they pull the tractor, not a tractor exactly, plow. Tractor is something new. But the word tractor is also very similar to the word attract. You know, attract, tractor, you got it? That means attract, to pull. So tractor is something that pulls. Usually, because nowadays they have tractors with a front-end loader that pushes. But generally, a tractor was something that pulled. And so Krishna pulls the devotee's attention to him. And that's Krish. And Na means two different things, of course. One thing is the cessation of material existence. And the other one is Ananda. So that's a derivation of the word Krishna. And of course, that is not an offense on chanting. We're not giving a speculative interpretation. That's the interpretation or understanding given by the acharyas. So, as far as the Krishna's attractive features, some of them are elaborated on in the nectar devotion. That's the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or Prabhupada's translation and commentary of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And we like to read about some of the qualities of Krishna in this particular context. So there's actually several chapters. There's qualities of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna further explained. That's 21, 22. And then there's the further traits of Sri Krishna. There's actually three chapters in the Nectar Devotion. But we're going to start off in the middle of the first chapter, chapter 21. Not exactly the middle, but there's a brief introduction here, and then each quality is described in depth. And of course we know that Krishna has, in this particular chapter, there's 64 qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead being described, this chapter and the next chapter. And of course Krishna has four qualities that no other person, including any other incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, possesses. Those qualities are, you know, unexcelled beauty, beauty that can attract even the other incarnations of the Lord, as we see when the Mahavishnu, that story in the 10th canto, when the Mahavishnu stole the children of the Brahmana. You know, the Brahmana kept having children. Brahmana, his wife, of course, kept having children. And Mahavishnu kept stealing them all. And then Arjuna took a vow. He said, you know, I'm the great Arjuna. Nobody can get away with anything in my presence. Of course, he was exhibiting a little transcendental pride in that particular context. So he stated, Arjuna stated that I will protect the Brahmin and the Brahmin's sons. And if I can't do that, I'll voluntarily embrace the fire or leave this body. And so Krishna taught him a lesson in humility. As he was standing outside the Brahmin's house, the Brahmin's wife gave birth to another kid, and then the kid disappeared. So Arjuna was getting ready to commit suicide, and then Krishna decided to save the day. He put Arjuna on his transcendental chariot. They pierced through the coverings of the material world and went to see the Mahavishnu. And the Mahavishnu said, yeah, I just made this trick just to see you. So even Krishna's incarnations, they appreciate the beauty of Krishna, you know, unexcelled beauty. So other qualities of Krishna, only that Krishna in his original aspect have, are that Krishna plays the flute. Sometimes you'll see depicted in some Hindu movies that you'll have Lord Vishnu or Krishna and Dwarka with a flute, but it's not actually a fact. I mean, there's so many speculative things in these Bollywood movies. Just like the other day, I was seeing this movie about Hanuman, and that showed Hanuman had a kid. And anyway, there's a whole story about that. Hanuman sweated one time, and then the crocodile. Anyway, and there was a little kid. But actually, that's bogus. Because in the Valmiki Ramayana, it doesn't state that. So Krishna only possesses a flute in Vrindavan. Outside of Vrindavan, he just leaves his flute behind. So another quality that's only there in Vrindavan is the intimate devotees. You know, devotees who have the higher stages of the relationships with Krishna, such as equal friendship, such as parental relationship where they can chastise Krishna. There's some aspect of parental relationship and friendship outside of Vrindavan, that's true, but it's not true. It's not that the person actually becomes superior to the Lord. I mean, of course, you have, you know, Devahuti and Karnama who had Kapila Dev as their son. But Devahuti was very much respectful towards Kapila Dev, Lord Kapila Dev. It's not, there's no descriptions of her running after Lord Kapila Dev with a stick and tying him up to a grinding mortar. You never read about that. You know, she was very, actually, in the descriptions of the Bhagavatam, she's offering prayers to him. She's saying, Prapanandam Adam Rabu, that my dear Lord, I'm sick of the disturbances. Nivritayer Nitmaram Bhuman. Asad Indriya Tarshanat. She says, I'm sick of the disturbances caused by the senses. Therefore, I'm surrendering to you. But you never hear Yashodamayi saying that to Krishna. Because she's not even thinking of Krishna's God. Even one time she looked in his mouth and she saw all the universes when she was accusing Krishna of eating dirt. And she was overwhelmed for a second. But then Krishna said, this is not a good idea for her to be in that mood. And he covered her again by that yogamaya potency so she could again have her actual mood. So even though there's some friendship, and even though there's some parental relationship, and even though there's some married relationship like in the wives of Krishna and Dwarka, still it's not intimate like in Vrindavan. You know, the intimate devotees. The most intimate devotees are in Vrindavan, where they can actually chastise Krishna. Where they can, like you have Radharani, just like refusing to see Krishna and having her friends, Lalita and others, stationed outside of her kunja with sticks to beat Krishna if he ever comes close. You never find that. I mean, you'll find some similarity in Dwarka, but not really on that same intimate level, with Satyabhama nagging Krishna. But it never comes close to taking a stick to her husband. Never comes close to that. You know, still, she's reverent. She's angry, but she's reverent. There's still that reverent attitude. So, and then the final quality that's only there in Vrindavan is the intimate pastimes. And intimate pastimes like, you know, Krishna dancing with the gopis in the middle of the night and other pastimes like that. So anyway, so those four qualities are only manifest in Vrindavan, in Braj. Also, to a certain extent, I mean, you could say the qualities are also manifest in Mayapur Dham, which is Gupta Vrindavan. So the same qualities are not manifest, at least in the Prakrita, you know, can't see them, but in the descriptions and the interactions between the devotees, those qualities are manifest, except there's no flute playing. Because Lord Chaitanya has intimate devotees, and Lord Chaitanya has devotees who chastise him, like Jagannanda Pandit, who's actually Satyabhama. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has unexcelled beauty. So I would say generally those, except for the flute playing, are exhibited in Sridhar Mayapur. So anyway, so let's read about some of Krishna's qualities here which are elaborated on by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion. And the first one, of course, is beautiful bodily features, which is mentioned here in this verse. Any comparison of the different parts of the Lord's body to different material objects cannot factually be a complete comparison. Ordinary persons who cannot understand how exalted are the bodily features of the Lord are simply given a chance to understand by a material comparison. It is said that Krishna's face is as beautiful as the moon. His thighs are powerful just like the trunks of elephants. His arms are just like two pillars. His palms are expanded like lotus flowers. His chest is just like a doorway. His hips are dens, and the middle of his body is a terrace. So that's beautiful bodily. And the second one is also about Krishna's transcendental body. Auspicious characteristics. There are certain characteristics of different limbs which are considered to be very auspicious and are fully present in the body of the Lord. In this connection is a beautiful description. One friend of Nanda Maharaj, speaking about Lord Krishna's auspicious bodily symptoms, said, "My dear king of the cowards, I can find 32 auspicious symptoms on the body of your son. I'm wondering how this boy could have taken his birth in a family of coward men. Generally, when Lord Krishna appears, he does so in a family of Kshatriya kings, as did Lord Ramchandra, and sometimes in the family of Brahmanas. But Krishna accepted the role of son to Maharaj Nanda, despite the fact that Nanda belonged to the Vaishya community. The business of the Vaishya community is trade, commerce, and the protection of cows. Therefore, his friend, who may have been born into a Brahmin family, expressed his wonder at how such an exalted child could take birth in a family of Vaishyas. Anyway, he pointed out the auspicious signs on the body of Krishna to the boy's foster father." Now, the reason that's stated, that, you know, why is it or how is it that an attractive person could be born, such an attractive person with all these auspicious bodily characteristics can be born into family of Vaishyas, is that Vaishyas are traditionally, or always, within the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, where Kshatriya is in the mode of passion and Brahman is in the mode of goodness. So these qualities are mode of goodness qualities, which are not generally exhibited in a Vaishya. Just like you see, generally people who are farmers, they're not attractive as Kshatriyas are. I mean, Kshatriyas are really attractive to women anyway. And Brahmanas, they're even more attractive because they have this effulgence, whereas Krishna has all the transcendental Vishuddha Sattva characteristics, in spite of being in the Vaishya family, which means mixed modes of passion and ignorance. So that's why Nanda Maharaj's friend is raising these particular points. He continued, "This boy has a reddish luster in seven places: his eyes, the palms of his hands, the soles of his feet, his palate, his lips, his tongue, and his nails." A reddish luster in these seven places is considered to be auspicious. I mean, you can actually examine your own bodies and see that you probably don't have any of these characteristics. Three parts of the body are very broad: his waist, forehead, and chest. Three parts of his body are short: his neck, thighs, and genitals. Three parts of his body are very deep: his voice, intelligence, and navel. There is highness in five parts of his body: his nose, arms, ears, forehead, and thighs. In five parts of the body, there is fineness: his skin, the hairs on his head, and other parts of his body, his teeth, and his fingertips. The aggregate of all these bodily features is manifest only in the bodies of great personalities. In other words, generally you don't see Vaishyas with these different characteristics. Their hands are rough. You know, they look a little rough because they're farmers. The fate lines on the palm are also considered to be auspicious bodily symptoms. In this connection, one old gopi informed King Nanda, "Your son possesses various wonderful fate lines on his palms. There are the signs of lotus flowers and wheels on his palms, and on his soles there are the signs of a flag, a thunderbolt, a fish, a rod for controlling elephants, and a lotus flower. Please observe how auspicious these signs are. So next characteristic mentioned here is pleasing. Beautiful bodily features which automatically attract the eyes are called ruchira, pleasing. Krishna possesses this attractive feature of ruchira in his personal features. In the third canto, second chapter, verse 13 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a statement about this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his pleasing dress appeared at the scene of the sacrificial arena when King Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. All important personalities from different parts of the universe had been invited to the sacrificial arena, and all of them, upon beholding Krishna there, considered that the Creator had ended all of his craftsmanship in the creation of this particular body of Krishna. It is said that the transcendental body of Krishna resembles the lotus flower in eight parts, namely his face, his two eyes, his two hands, his navel, and his two lotus feet. The gopis and the inhabitants of Vrindavan used to see the luster of lotus flowers everywhere, and they could hardly withdraw their eyes from such a vision. Next is effulgence. The effulgence pervading the universe is considered to be the rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The supreme abode of Krishna is always throwing off the effulgence known as Brahmajyoti, and that effulgence is emanating from his body. The luster of the hosts of jewels fixed on the chest of the Lord can defeat even the luster of the sun, and still, when compared with the bodily luster of the Lord, that crest of jewels appears to be only as bright as one of the stars in the sky. Therefore, the transcendental influence of Krishna is so great that it can defeat anyone. When Krishna was present in the sacrificial arena of his enemy, King Kongsa, the wrestlers present, although appreciating the softness of the body of Sri Krishna, were afraid and perturbed when they thought of engaging with him in battle. Next quality is strong. A person who has extraordinary bodily strength is called Balyan. When Krishna killed Arishtasura, some of the gopis said, "My dear friends, just see how Krishna has killed Arishtasura. Although he was stronger than a mountain, Krishna plucked him up just like a piece of cotton and threw him away without any difficulty." There is another passage wherein it is said, "Oh, my dear devotees of Lord Krishna, may the left hand of Lord Krishna, which is lifted Govardhan Hill like a ball, save you from all dangers." Ever youthful. This is nice. Krishna is beautiful at his different ages, namely his childhood, his boyhood, and his youth. Out of these, his youth is the reservoir of all pleasures and is the time when the highest varieties of devotional service are acceptable. At that age, Krishna is full with all transcendental qualities and is engaged in his transcendental pastimes. Therefore, devotees have accepted the beginning of his youth as the most attractive feature in ecstatic love. At this age, Krishna is described as follows. The force of Krishna's youth was combined with his beautiful smile, which defeated even the beauty of the full moon. He was always nicely dressed in beauty surpassing even Cupid, and he was always attracting the minds of the gopis, were thereby always feeling pleasure. So we should understand also that Krishna's ever youthfulness continues forever, and it continued throughout all of his pastimes on the earth 5,000 years ago. Prabhupada describes that when Krishna was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, driving the chariot of Arjuna, even though Krishna was ostensibly 125 years old, had been on the earth 125 years, he looked like a youth of 16. That's amazing. Actually, people are 125 years old. I haven't seen anyone 125. But people who are even 100 years old, they don't look like youths of 16. they live. So anyway, so that's why youthfulness is the most attractive time of life. Even for animals. Like if you have little animals, of course not baby cockroaches, but if you have little like cows, they look like calves. They look like little deer, baby deer. I mean, they're very cute. And when they're older, they're not so cute anymore. But Krishna is always cute. He's always youthful. Why? Because he has a body, Satchidananda Vigraha. Ishwaro Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha. Anadir Adir Kovinda Sarvakarana Karanam. He has a body made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, not like our bodies that are made of tridaduke, bile, mucus, and air. That's a description. One who thinks that the body, tridaduke, is attractive is definitely an illusion. So the next quality is wonderful linguist. Rupa Goswami says that a person who knows the languages of different countries, especially the Sanskrit language, which is spoken in the cities of the demigods, as well as otherworldly languages, including those of the animals, is called a wonderful linguist. It appears from this statement that Krishna can also speak and understand the language of the animals. An old woman in Vrindavan, present at the time of Krishna's pastimes, once stated in surprise, "How wonderful it is that Krishna, who owns the hearts of all the young girls of Brajabhumi, can nicely speak the language of Brajabhumi with the gopis, while in Sanskrit he even speaks with the demigods, and in the language of the animals, he can even speak with the cows and buffalo." Similarly, in the language of the Kashmir province, and with the parrots and other birds, as well as in most common languages, Krishna is so expressive. She inquired from the gopis as to how Krishna had become so expert in speaking so many different types of languages. Amazing. I mean, these descriptions are very pleasing to the ear. Now, this is in line with the verse today in Sanskrit. How, if we hear these things, we become attracted to Krishna. Attracted. We don't have to push people. I mean, sometimes in preaching or in dealing with devotees or in dealing with children, we push them. You know, chant your rounds, dance for Krishna. But really, it's not like that. We have to allow the attractiveness of Krishna to pull them. And that's why when we're preaching, we just get people to chant a little bit, take a little prasadam, and automatically they'll be attracted to Krishna. We don't have to chastise them and tell them that their whole material life is useless, like generally we do. So truthful. A person whose word of honor is never broken is called truthful. Krishna once promised Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, that he would bring her 5 sons back from the battlefield of Kurukshetra. After the battle was finished, when all the Pandavas had come home, Kunti praised Krishna because his promise was so nicely fulfilled. She said, "Even the sunshine may one day become cool, and the moonshine one day become hot, but still your promise will never fail." Similarly, when Krishna, along with Bhima and Arjuna, went to challenge Jarasandha, he plainly told Jarasandha that he was the eternal Krishna present along with 2 of the Pandavas. The story is that both Krishna and the Pandavas, in this case Bhima and Arjuna, were Kshatriyas, warrior kings. Jarasandha was also a Kshatriya and was very charitable toward the Brahmanas. Thus Krishna, who had planned to fight with Jarasandha, went to him with Bhima and Arjuna in the dress of the Brahmanas. Jarasandha, being very charitable toward the Brahmanas, asked them what they wanted, and they expressed their desire to fight with him. Then Krishna, dressed as a Brahmana, declared himself to be the same Krishna who was the king's eternal enemy. And one more. Pleasing talker. A person who can speak sweetly even with his enemy just to pacify him is called a pleasing talker. Krishna was such a pleasing talker that after defeating his enemy Kaliya in the water of the Yamuna, he said, "My dear king of the snakes, although I have given you so much pain, please do not be dissatisfied with me. It is my duty to protect these cows, which are worshipped even by the demigods. Only in order to save them from the danger of your presence have I been obliged to banish you from this place. Kaliya was residing within the water of the Yamuna, and as a result, the back portion of that river had become poisoned. Thus, so many cows who had drunk the water had died. Therefore, Krishna, even though he was only 4 or 5 years old, dipped himself into the water, punished Kaliya very severely, and then asked him to leave the place and go elsewhere. Krishna said at that time that the cows are worshipped even by the demigods, and he practically demonstrated how to protect the cows. At least people who are in Krishna consciousness, should follow in his footsteps and give all protection to the cows. The cows are worshipped not only by the demigods. Krishna himself worshipped the cows on several occasions, especially on the days of Gopashtami and Govardhan Puja. So that's enough nectar for today. So every day we should read about these qualities of Krishna. And then automatically, Rasa Bharjam, Rasa Pyasa, Param Krishna, Nivartate. Then we lose our desire for the mundane things, both subtle and gross, in this world. Krishna is so amazing. And we read about Krishna's devotees, of course, we read about Prabhupada's pastimes, same thing. We become very much attracted, and automatically, renunciation occurs. Vasudeva, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Prayojita. Janayati asu vairagyam janaya cha ahoitupam. Automatically, we get knowledge and renunciation. On that happy note, all glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda.